radio station.
It's all free, baby.
From WJFF in Jeffersonville, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Roe Reaction. For nearly 50 years, Americans have had the constitutional right to an abortion. On Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court officially reversed Roe v. Wade, declaring that the constitutional right to abortion no longer exists. We'll hear from local community members expressing frustration, fear, and anger. We hear from Sullivan County resident Sandra Oxford, activist and advocate for workers' rights, youth services, and immigrant communities. Community activist Barb Schmidt. Our own Janice Adams, journalist, author, historian, and host of the Janice Adams Show. And we hear from voices of the people who gathered at the Monticello Courthouse last night to protest the ruling. It's coming up. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. At the White House this morning, President Biden signed into law the bipartisan gun safety bill, thanking family members of mass shooting victims for leading the way.
Their message to us was do something. How many times have we heard that? Just do something. For God's sake, just do something. Well, today, we did.
The president acknowledged that the bill does not include provisions Democrats had sought, such as a ban on assault-style weapons, but he said it will save lives. The law is the first significant measure addressing gun violence in 30 years. Following Senate passage, the House sent the bill to Biden's desk yesterday. At the signing of the gun violence bill, the president was asked about yesterday's Supreme Court decision that allow states to decide on abortion access. He said the court has made some terrible decisions and vowed to keep an eye on the actions taken by the states to make sure they do not violate other laws. Kentucky, one of the states where the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe versus Wade effectively ends abortion rights. Kentucky is one of 13 states with what are called trigger laws. Karen Czar with member station WUKY reports from Kentucky's capital.
Kentucky legislators passed the Human Life Protection Act in 2019, and the state's attorney general, Daniel Cameron, says this now means,
except where the health of the mother is at risk, abortion is no longer lawful in the Commonwealth.
Kentucky's law bans nearly all abortions, even in the case of rape or incest. Samuel Crankshaw, spokesperson with the ACLU of Kentucky, says their legal team is analyzing how the ruling relates to existing state and federal laws. But for now,
as a precaution, we've advised our client to stop providing all care.
Most states bordering Kentucky have also curtailed abortion access. For NPR News, I'm Karen Czar in Frankfort.
The country's tech giants are responding to the Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade. NPR's Bobby Allen reports that Silicon Valley firms are offering to support employees, just as worries grow that tech firms could be targeted in prosecutions.
Tech companies were quick to offer additional resources to its enormous workforces. Big tech firms like Facebook parent company Meta, Apple, and Google are offering to cover travel expenses to any of its hundreds of thousands of employees seeking reproductive health services. Ride-hailing companies Lyft and Uber say they will cover any legal expenses a driver incurs if prosecuted by a state for providing transportation to an abortion, something that is now possible in many states. Meanwhile, data privacy experts are warning that state authorities could subpoena data like search history and geolocation from companies like Google, Facebook, and Amazon to prosecute women seeking abortion. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
And you're listening to NPR News. Police in the Norwegian capital of Oslo say the suspect they have in custody in last night's shootings is a 42-year-old Norwegian citizen originally from Iran. He was arrested after a gunman opened fire at three locations in the city's downtown, including outside of a bar popular with Oslo's LGBTQ community. Two people were killed, 10 others seriously injured. Organizers of today's Pride Parade have canceled the event. Britain's train services are heavily restricted for the third day this week. Willem Marks reports a rail strike is in response to threatened job cuts and low pay, and it's bringing services to a halt across the country.
Talks between the rail network operator and the private train companies have continued all week, but they've been unable to reach a resolution, and Saturday's strike is having major impacts on several large events, particularly in the British capital. The Rolling Stones and Ed Sheeran are playing sell-out concerts, with many ticket holders struggling to travel into London, while major coastal resorts in England and Wales that would normally draw large crowds during warm summer weather are without train services. Tens of thousands of workers belonging to the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union have been involved in the strike, and passengers are advised to avoid rail travel today unless absolutely necessary, with only major lines operating a skeletal service. For NPR News, I'm Willem Marks in London.
NASA is delaying a mission to an asteroid because of a software problem. The mission had been planned for this fall, but the space agency says the software has not been tested properly because it was delivered late. NASA says it's considering whether it can reschedule for next year. I'm Giles Snyder, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Kauffman Foundation, working together with communities to break down barriers and prepare all people for success in their jobs and careers as employees or entrepreneurs. More online at kauffman.org.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The U.S. Supreme Court overturned the constitutional right to an abortion that was guaranteed nearly 50 years ago by the decision in Roe v. Wade. The ruling in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization was released yesterday morning. The justices, voting 6-3 along ideological lines, sided with the Mississippi abortion law that was in question. Reactions were mixed across the country, with anti-abortion rights supporters celebrating what they view as a victory and abortion rights activists expressing their frustration over the decision. Local abortion rights supporters marched at the Monticello courthouse yesterday evening, and here are some of their reactions.
Abortion is healthcare! Abortion is healthcare! Abortion is healthcare! Abortion is healthcare!
Do you mind if I talk to you for a sec for WJFF?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, this seems like a pretty good turnout out here.
Yeah. You know, for it just happening? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's shocking. Even though we knew it was coming, women are being stripped of their human rights. People who have uteruses are being stripped of their human rights.
Yeah.
Whether they're identified as female, non-binary, trans, people are being denied their ability to make choices about what happens to their body. And I think it's really foolish if people think that it's just going to stop here. I mean, it's a slippery slope. If anyone understands how our court systems work, they use law and judgments to decide other laws and other judgments. So this could have impacts that are far-reaching.
Yeah.
This is a lot of people in this country who are real comfortable right now thinking this won't impact them.
Yeah.
But we know that there is an effort nationally. They want to take over Congress and change the laws, right? So there has been some talk about that, right? That's what we want to do. We want to give human rights to everyone in America on a federal level.
Absolutely.
And they want to stop that. So there isn't a single election that is trivial. From dog catcher on up, every single election is important. So we need people out voting. Not voting is voting.
Yeah, it's voting for
right.
Whatever else is going to happen.
Apathy and indifference is siding with the oppressing force.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's a lot of indifference, a cruel indifference in this country right now towards a lot of human suffering.
Right.
You know, I've been working on elder rights and trying to help the elderly in our community. And it's just, if it doesn't impact them, people just don't seem to care. There's a lot of division, and people aren't seeing their fellow man as a human being, right? We've dehumanized each other, and it's really sad.
Yeah.
You know, we're in a good place in New York, so we feel very badly for people in other states who feel like they had the rug pulled out from under them. And it's all going to be who has the money to travel to New York or some other state where it's safe to have a safe legal abortion. Some women are not. And so some people are going to, you know, be in a very bad position. They're either going to be forced into bearing a child that they feel ill-equipped for whatever reason. There may be some people who are carrying right now a fetus that they love because they've been wanting to have a baby, and then all of a sudden their doctor is going to say, we've discovered something devastating, and it's terrible. It's terrible. I've seen husbands just weeping, like openly weeping, because they're so fearful that the love of their life is going to die in childbirth. I mean, how does that happen in 2022? People shouldn't be dying like that in childbirth anymore.
My name is Ann Hart.
I heard that you were one of the organizers of this event, primarily.
Yeah, it's teamwork. There are a group of people who have been working on reproductive rights for years who are involved in this. People from our indivisible group, We Are One Sullivan, who are involved in this.
Okay.
And just regular people that we know through life.
Okay. And has this sort of effort to organize stuff like this been going on since the draft got leaked?
Yes, we actually did one that day as well.
Okay.
And a follow-up one the next week as well, and I'm sure that there will be more as time goes on.
It's not going away.
No, it's not.
Do you think there's a lot of support in the county for reproductive rights?
I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so.
I've stood on this corner before, and this is beyond anything I've ever seen, the reaction.
That's Andrew Weil. We're all in this together.
I'm astounded, to tell you.
Certainly a lot of people out here today.
It's good.
If this is any indicator.
We also have to make sure that we hold a majority in the legislature in New York State.
And
most of the people who are running for governor on the Republican side are fully aligned with this Trump agenda of really undoing what's been undone nationally. They're on board for that, too.
Okay.
You know, so, hopefully they won't get elected, but we have to always be on our guard here and protect ourselves here locally as well as those who need us elsewhere.
Okay, so there's the chance that things could change at the national level.
Everything changes.
Yeah, everything changes.
The whole world has changed.
Yeah.
You know, this move has been going on for 30, 40 years to undo all of this, and they've been successful while we slept, and that's unfortunate. It's on us.
Yeah.
It's really on us, and we have to fix it. You know, we feel good that New York is safe, but New York, it was hard won, safety. And
true.
So we have to make sure that it stays safe, and especially stays safe for people who come in here.
And that was Liam Mayo from the River Reporter at the march yesterday in Monticello at the courthouse, speaking to abortion rights supporters. We thank Liam and the River Reporter for that audio. Radio Catskills' Patricia Rubio spoke to several local community members for their reaction to the decision. Here's Patricia's conversation with Sandra Oxford, activist and advocate for workers' rights, youth services, and immigrant communities.
Well, you know, many of us were not surprised when we saw, we knew once the Alito document was leaked that this was going to be a judicial hit job on women's rights, on human rights. And it's just, unfortunately, this court is really telegraphing to us how terrible it is to have these three Trump appointees guide justice in the United States. 50 years of what we believed was already the law of the land, to have that stripped away from us. You know, I haven't had any, today's the first day in my life that I've had a right stripped away from me. And I'm just really concerned what other rights we're going to be facing that we will no longer have as a result of this regressive court.
It's just amazing to say what happened in these past 2 days, the way their decisions have changed the lives for everyone.
You know, now we have to look forward. We have to get to the ballot box. We have to organize people because the regressive right is not playing. They are very serious. The fact that we still have a little bit of influence over Congress in this administration is helpful. However, the projection for the coming election is not as hopeful for Democrats. And we have to really change that. We have to be sure that pivots and that it becomes much more important for people to understand why they have to be engaged, why they have to participate. I don't know what would happen under a Republican Congress to women's reproductive rights in that realm, right? We see what the courts are doing. And if we were to give them another leg of the stool, so to speak, by having them control Congress and control laws across the country, we're gonna have a serious situation on our hands as it relates to our civil rights and our human rights.
What are the next steps? What should happen now?
Well, I see that women across the country are outraged. I see their allies are outraged. I see that people are organizing, and I'm hoping that we are going to continue to do this. We have to be, this is not just a spray and pray where we get out there one day, we hold some signs and we pray that that takes hold. This is not it. People have to be ready to join the movement. This is a movement, and this is what the movement does. The movement is here to shake up these institutions. We see what the court did today. It is going to be incumbent and reliant on all of us to really, really create that groundswell of support in the streets, in the ballot box, in our states, to be sure that we figure out how to not allow any more turf to be taken away from us. We have to support organizers. We have to really collaborate and contribute in any way that we can. This is going to be a moment where we really, really have to just put down whatever tribal wars may be existing in existence as it relates to some of the culture wars for moderate Democrats and also for the left. We're going to have to put that to the side. And we are going to really, really have to get together and be lockstep in unity to be sure that we have to turn this tide, Patricio. And it's going to be on a variety of fronts. It's going to be in the states. It's going to be in our local elections. It's going to be of who we send to Congress. And it's going to be of what type of leadership that we are going to install. We really, really need courageous leadership right now. Bipartisan leadership is not what we need. The bipartisan people who have gone along to get along, in my opinion, are the ones who have put us in this position. And they are cowards. I don't hear the Manchins and the Sinemas and all of these other Democrats who have gone along with the GOP and with the Republican talking points. It almost feels like an American version of what we're seeing. I mean, I don't know what it felt like when the Taliban first came into office and these fundamental ideas and this very, you know, all this religiosity. I can only imagine that, you know, people felt a little bit the way we feel today. I don't know how far the right is going to go to take us back. They've already taken us back 50 years. How much further back are they going to take us?
You make a good point about how important are elections in every level, because whether you're left or right, it just affects your everyday life. And just look what happened today. These two major decisions happened because who was elected?
It's true. Because, I mean, with one bad midterm election, we could have these Republicans outlaw abortion nationwide. And right now, I know everybody's trying to do the math with the geography, with the states, and figuring out how to, you know, I'm hearing on the national level they want to start incorporating transportation into safe states. That could be lost too if we don't do what we have to do today. And we have to start building our farm team. We have to start building new leaders. We need some of these elders, some of these more seasoned leaders to serve as advisors and to help the next generation, to help the young people who are the ones who are going to help sustain and stabilize the situation to get on board.
It's amazing, said what has happened in the past couple of days with the Supreme Court rulings, strike one of them also being besides the Roe versus Wade that came out on Friday, but on Thursday the Supreme Court shut down the New York handgun law when it deals with concealed weapons. It's in light of everything that's happened in Buffalo.
Right. And there you see the court took us back 100 years. So this is a very regressive court. This court is all about stripping away the advancements of what we have done to protect our communities, protect societies, protect our civil rights, protect our safety. This is not something a year ago that I thought that we were going to see at this level, the height with which this court is changing the landscape of civil rights and human rights in the United States of America. I had heard of it. I did not think that we were going to have the dystopian type of week that we are having here in the United States.
Like I said, it took everything back to almost to the Wild West. Now that people could sort of carry around handguns around and you don't know who's having a gun in and their intentions with it. It's just a scary situation to live in these past 2 days, and how much has already changed just from, I said, those who have been voted in make these recommendations and make these choices. And we now are dealing with this fallout from that.
Yeah, I want to send as much support and solidarity to everyone who is outraged and who is concerned, and just remind folks not to agonize. We have to organize and be very productive, and we have to help each other. We have to be there for each other, and we have to create the future that we were all planning to live into without this abrupt regression that we've experienced this week. This was a terrible week.
Sandra, before we go, is there anything else you would like to add?
Thank you. Thank you for the coverage, WJFF. Thank you for always being where the grass meets the roots and amplifying our voices, because many of us are here and we're speaking up for our communities and for our own personal situations as well. So I just want to thank WJFF.
For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Rubio.
We'll take a short break and be back with more local reaction to the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe v. Wade. This is Radio Catskill.
You know, I certainly like public radio more than I like the car.
It would actually be great to see, you know, some sort of flow chart that would say, you know, the muffler got sold, oh, we got this microphone cover. The stereo got sold, we got this trash can. The engine block was sold, we paid, you know, Peter Sagal's salary for about 25 minutes.
Hi, you're on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
My name is Matthew Loambra. I donated my 1998 Saturn SC2 to public radio.
Donate your car at WJFFradio.org.
Hello, if you're a book reader, and even if you're not, I'd like to invite you to join me, Aaron Hicklin, every Sunday at noon for Shelf Life on WJFF Radio Catskill, a show about books and the people who love them. Each episode, my guest picks two of their favorite books. I read them, and then we get together to talk about them. That's Shelf Life on Sundays at noon on WJFF Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. In a historic and far-reaching decision, the U.S. Supreme Court officially reversed Roe v. Wade on Friday, declaring that the constitutional right to abortion upheld for nearly half a century no longer exists. Today, we're hearing from local voices for their reaction and perspective. We reached out to our own Janice Adams, host of the Janice Adams Show here on Radio Catskill Saturdays at noon. She's a scholar of African-American and women's history and specializes in putting current events into historical perspective. Radio Catskill's Patricia Rubio spoke to her shortly after the ruling was issued.
Patricio, my thought was that, I'm going to start back. Patricio, my thought was that Roe v. Wade is just the tip of the iceberg and that people need to see it in context. Yesterday, it was the gun laws, that states had no rights to regulate gun laws, but they do have a right today to regulate women's bodies. Before that, it was that essentially I think it was the state of Maine, now has to provide public funds to church-related schools. So the Constitution originalist is in existence for guns and for forcing a lack of separation between church and state, and then as an outgrowth today. The Supreme Court has also not backed up voting rights. Not only has the Congress not done so because of the Republican Party, but the Republican-led Supreme Court has not supported voting rights. Roe v. Wade is part of that. It doesn't stand by itself. And therefore, what we're seeing with this Roe v. Wade decision is a return to essentially post-Reconstruction II. The Civil Rights era was considered the second Reconstruction, the first Reconstruction being after the Civil War. So here we have the takedown of the second Reconstruction. And the things that happened in this country in the second Reconstruction were essentially human rights issues that had been denied for the entire 200-year history of the country prior to that. That's what we're seeing now. And when the gateway is left open for other things that supposedly are not in the Constitution under this ruse of originalist nonsense, well, the only ones in the Constitution are white men of privilege, landholding white men. So everything else is not in the Constitution. And for all people, Clarence Thomas, to have the audacity to talk about being an originalist, then you get to the point of understanding how bizarre all of this actually is. So this is the reinstitutionalization of white male supremacy.
Where do we go from here? What do we think are the next steps that women and all of us have to take?
Well, I think that what has to be done, and the Republican Party should be glad that we are not of the mindset to go storm and scale buildings and break windows at the Capitol and then lie about it. This is such a violation, not only of, quote, rights, but of personhood, that it's going to take a moment for people to really see it for what it is. And those people who are still most in power, who least understand the effects, meaning to them as individuals, the effects, are going to have to step aside and stop talking nonsense. And by that, I include President Biden, who is a man I admire, but still in his head is existing in the glory days of the Senate that he knew when he came into office. And he is also still in denial about how racist and sexist that power structure was that welcomed him. So when he says that the solution to all of this is to take to the ballot box, completely ignoring the fact that Republican-led legislatures all over this country have already denied, they have crafted legislation and enacted legislation that is suppressing the vote. Who is supposed to vote for this among the majority people of color who were the ones who put him in office? Where is the majority supposed to come from to vote for this? And I think we all have to see that for what it is. The Supreme Court did not uphold the Voting Rights Act. And when it was brought to their attention how dangerous not upholding the Voting Rights Act was. They said, well, it was too late to make a decision on it, and it could be handled in the next election. Well, in that window of denying the Voting Rights Act, we have this voter suppression that only, therefore, people who are in the privileged group who get to vote will be able to vote on current elected officials. So who are then going to put into place the mechanism to further suppress the vote? So I think that the next thing that we have to do, frankly, is to confront honestly and openly what is really happening here so that we can really then assess our next steps from a realistic platform. As an aside, but on point, yesterday, as I have since the January 6th hearings began, I watched the entire hearing. And I was struck yesterday, as I was in previous days, with the exception of the two Black women who were totally smeared by Rudy Giuliani and then Donald Trump, who just fabricated racist trope nonsense about these women and destroyed their lives. With the exception of those two women, in presenting these Republicans who now have found religion and are coming to stand up for Donald Trump, I mean, against Donald Trump, and to speak the truth, and who held the line, and all of this stuff that's being said, it does not escape me that when Donald Trump was going for the, quote, Mexicans, they did nothing. When Donald Trump was going for Blacks, they did nothing. When Donald Trump was going for every group that he has assaulted and abused politically since he had been elected, those were loyalists to him. They did not step up to, quote, do the right thing until they saw that they would go to jail for it, until it had personal repercussions for them. So I mention that, and that's every last one of them, including the Georgia, quote, heroes, and Mike Pence, who, quote, did his job. No, every one of them allowed this tyranny to take place until it reached their personal door. And so that, to me, is part of understanding what is happening here. And therefore, when we say next steps, we have to understand who is and who is not an ally to decency, honesty, and truth. If we don't confront that, then we will continue to lie to ourselves and therefore be ineffective.
What do you think is sort of the genesis of that loyalty? Is it about just keeping their jobs so they know they have votes with Trump? Or is like I said, the separation of church and state has gone away for them, and they're thinking that their religion or their values is good for everyone? Do you think that loyalty is coming? Where do you think that loyalty is coming from?
Pragmatism and profit. We don't know all that Trump did with the $250 million he allegedly has raised from this scam that he's been running. And the sad thing is that people don't even see it as a scam because people voluntarily gave him their money. People who, I think the average contribution is something like $31. So obviously people who don't have a lot of money gave it to this man who was lying to them. And this country is still trying to figure out what they can do about it. But one thing that did strike me in that $250 million is where some of the money went. And the question is, where did the rest of the money go? When we start talking about loyalties, where did the rest of the money go? And I am not conspiracy theory. I'm just saying, if he paid his own son's girlfriend $60,000 to show up on January 6th as a payment for fees rendered, what kind of promises have been made to other people? Yesterday's hearing brought out, yesterday's January 6th, or I should say Thursday's January 6th hearing, brought out that one person was promised being acting attorney general for his transgressions, and the very lawyer, the woman, Sidney Powell, who was running around the country doing all these court cases that she lost on Trump's behalf because they had no substance, and she herself, when called to task, but under oath called to task, said no one would really believe the kinds of things that were being said. So she backed away from that when she was under oath, but when she was not under oath, she was pushing this nonsense. She was promised another cabinet position. Oh, no, she was promised that she would be the special prosecutor. So the question is, to me, the answer is pragmatism. Who gets to be in power who otherwise would not be in power? Who gets to stay in power who otherwise would not stay in power? Who gets paid off? Whatever, because we know that Donald Trump does whatever it takes. The man has no bottom. He has no moral core. So he does whatever it takes. And I think that's what these court cases, civil cases around the country, are now following in terms of seeing just how this was all put in place and who was promised what and how and, you know, all of that. I'm not going to play the lying game. I'm not going to conjecture what things were. The things that I've cited have already been entered into testimony in the January 6th hearings. That's why I'm citing them. But I think common sense tells you that this has spurious a bunch as you could find. They don't care what happens to people. Quick story. I met Rudolph Giuliani when he was mayor many years ago. And in New York City, a friend of mine had created this phenomenal building. People who've been to 125th Street and Fifth Avenue will know the building. It's the National Black Theater. And it was a gorgeous building that she even brought artisans from, Barbara Ann even brought artisans from Africa to work on the building. And Giuliani at the time was mayor, and when she then dedicated the corner of that building, the street name, to her sister, who had taught her the financial principles that allowed her to create that building. Giuliani was mayor. He came to dedication of the street sign, et cetera. And he was going down the road shaking hands. I have shaken a lot of hands all over the world. The one I remember is his, because I have never felt anything so painfully aggressive in my life. For a week later, my right shoulder was sore. That's the character and the nature that we're dealing with here.
So in terms of why, but for the average person who isn't part of the scam and the scheme and isn't getting the political perks from it, this week I've been thinking about a phrase that is attributed to Maya Angelou, and she was a friend, and it was part of her core belief. And the phrase is, people don't remember what you say, they remember how you make them feel. And I think for many people who've been disfranchised, who haven't been disfranchised, but who've been told they're disfranchised, I'm sorry, I'm not going to allow white people in America to talk about being disfranchised. I'm a black woman. And so I know what disfranchisement means in this country. But they've been told that because their power structure isn't solely their own any longer, to feel threatened. They've been told that they should feel threatened because a black man became president. They've been told all of this, and they were willing to go along with it. But Donald Trump came in and made them feel different. He made them feel good about their racist selves. He made them feel, you know, he made them feel good about the idea that their lives weren't as they would have wanted and it must be somebody else's fault. He made them feel great about that. And he made white women who really have to face, maybe not themselves, but their aunts, their mothers, their cousins, who voted for Donald Trump, they really have to face that and ask questions about that.
I remember when Donald Trump was first elected, there was someone I was speaking to who made a racist remark, and those who were in the room looked at him and questioning, like, wow, we just can't believe you said that. But he outright said, Trump's president now, I can say this. And that's what I get, is that his people who voted for him felt empowered or emboldened to now say things, I guess maybe they were always thinking, but felt that it wasn't correct to say, or they knew it was wrong. But now they have someone who's in the high power and are saying some of the things that they are thinking.
They are emboldened even more so yesterday by that gun decision. Because that gun decision emboldened people like Kyle Rittenhouse by saying that you can open carry a gun if you feel threatened. That was the argument, that Kyle Rittenhouse violated the laws of two states to cross state lines with a weapon to go to a march where he could have just stayed home if he felt so threatened. And as the case is going to verdict, the judge throws out the two charges under which he's obviously guilty, having violated state laws against underage minors having a weapon. And the judge does so in front of the jury. So here we now have this nonsensical idea that as long as you feel threatened, you can carry a gun anywhere at any time. So let's look at the applications and implications of that. Who is that for? Some people will feel a little uneasy because I said it was about the reinstitutionalization of white male supremacy. But let's look at this. Trayvon Martin is dead because of George Zimmerman, who was given permission under Stand Your Ground to murder a teenager with a soft drink and a bag of Skittles. A black woman in Florida also, who killed no one,
had a registered firearm and fired a warning shot to the for the husband, who admits that he had a habit of physically abusing her. She shot it in the air as a warning shot, harming no one, and she ended up in jail. Not only that, but when it was obvious that the prosecution that put her in jail wrongly, never should have, she was let out on condition that she would not file charges against them. So, who is this for? What is this about? And if you don't see it for what it is, you can't confront it.
It's amazing what, in the span of 2 days, how much everyone's lives have changed because of these two decisions that has come down from the Supreme Court. The gun laws in New York State, and now with overturning Roe versus Wade.
And I want to remind people of one other thing, especially, I mean, I have always considered it a travesty that Clarence Thomas was put in that space. In fact, it was so cynical on the part of Bush 1 to put him in place. Now, we expect nothing less from, or nothing more, however you look at it, from the Republican Party of that time. And for anyone who wants to waste their time talking about not all Republicans, let me just remind people, because I'm old enough not only to know the history, but the life experience, that I grew up in a Black family that was Republican. And most African Americans that of that time that we knew were Republican. And we were Republican, or my family, I wasn't old enough to be registered for anything, but the family was Republican because that was the way Northern Blacks tried to interact the Southern Dixiecrat Party, the Southern Democrats, who were maintaining and fighting to maintain segregation. So Blacks in the North often considered it that they were counterbalancing the force of the Democrats and not giving their power to Democrats in the North who were supporting and allied with the Dixiecrat Democrats of the South. That, of course, changed with or migrated. The Dixiecrat Democrats migrated to the Republican Party, number one, with John Kennedy's support for Dr. King, and number two, when Goldwater in 64 then takes the lead. And look at what a tragic figure Goldwater is, if you know anything about him, that he was spouting all this racist stuff, and Goldwater's family was not biracial, but bicultural. He was both Christian and Jewish. So, and here he is spouting this nonsense. I remind us all of what it takes, the kind of self-hatred that it takes to go along with this stuff, to go along, to get along. And I remind Clarence Thomas of the same thing. That is a man who has a biracial marriage. Here he is in his decision, opening the door to other things that are not included under the Constitution. Well, it wasn't until the 1960s that the Loving case allowed for interracial marriage. Is he going to overturn that too? Loving case. The couple, ironically, was named Loving. For those people who don't know that, that actually was the husband's family name, Loving. And the tragedy of that case is, or the pathology of that case is, it was a white husband and his Black wife. And they heard that they were the, quote, law officers, law officers heard that they were living together and married and broke into their house one night and found them in bed together, as most married couples are. And they were both arrested for that reason. The truth of the matter of that period of time, that before Roe period of time, that before voting rights period of time, the truth of that period of time was, had that man been in bed with that woman and found to be raping her, there would have been no charges against him whatsoever. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. Hashtag Me Too.
We were talking to Janice Adams, host of The Janice Adams Show here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Thank you so much, Janice, for joining us and giving us your insight and your thoughts on these historic opinions that have come out of the Supreme Court.
Thank you for asking me. Thank you for doing this. And I urge people, please listen, be conscious, and be activist.
For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Rubio.
And today we're getting local reaction. Patricio Rubio also speaking to community activist Barb Schmidt about the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Well, of course, it's devastating. So we as New Yorkers, we took proactive action a few years ago to make sure Roe was codified. But this is going to be a lot of trouble for more vulnerable women throughout the country. Many of them are going to hope that they have the resources to come here in order to have their own bodily autonomy. And we've enacted in Albany, our Congress has enacted several measures to help, so that if somebody needs funds to come here, if, you know, basically if they just need support, because in other states, it's going to be really devastating. And what we've always understood about this whole attack on Roe is that it's never been about the fetuses. Most of the folks who are after this are just using this as a political tool. So it's always been about getting votes. It's always been about controlling women. And if we need to go back to the dark ages in some states with the trigger laws, where women died in hospitals from back alley abortions, or women died in hospitals because they got sepsis after one of those back alley abortions, that's going to be really devastating. So it's certainly not about any kind of sanctity of life. That's just not a legit argument.
Many states have already enacted a total ban on abortion because of this decision. Where do we go from here?
So where we have to go is make sure that since the majority of Americans are pro-choice, we have to do everything that we can to elect pro-choice representatives who will honor our wishes and make sure that codifying Roe becomes a law of the land. It needs to be a federal law. We've danced around just relying on Supreme Court precedent for all these years. And certainly, as we saw the last three Supreme Court judges be appointed, they talked one way about how they would honor precedent, but we all knew what their agenda was because they were on the list. So what we have to do is make sure we have pro-choice representation at all states, at all levels, in all courts. And if it means that we need to lobby our senators and House representatives to expand the court, I, for one, am in favor of expanding the court, because the current court is just too radically far-right skewed, and it involves too many stolen seats, and we're going to need to modify the court in order to overcome that and have a Supreme Court that truly upholds our Constitution and truly doesn't put undue burdens on people. In the past, they've always talked about rights, mustn't have too much of an onerous burden. Well, if somebody wakes up this morning and finds out that they're pregnant and they're in a state where there's a trigger law or a zombie law, or some poor woman goes to visit her doctor and her doctor gives her the bad news that the fetus that she's carrying, that she's been, treasuring, all of a sudden she finds out that that fetus has some severe abnormality and would only suffer if brought to term. You know, these are dark days for people in that kind of situation.
Here in New York, abortion is still legal. And the New York City mayor, along with the governor, have called New York a safe haven for those women who are seeking abortions. Do you see sort of a mass exodus to our state or the states that are have abortion still legal from women from across the country who sort of, they said, want to have this procedure done in a safe manner and not be criminalized?
Oh, I believe there absolutely will. We certainly looked at numbers when Texas first enacted their ban. You had a tremendous amount of women who had to leave state, go to, let's say, a place like Oklahoma. Well, now Oklahoma is a problem. So where are those vulnerable women supposed to go? I know at one point when I was standing in front of the former Planned Parenthood in Monticello, an elderly man approached me and told me that back in the early 70s, when New York State had legalized abortion, but Roe had not been a decision yet, he had a younger sister who was getting ready to go to college, discovered she was pregnant, and fortunately the family had the resources to bring her from Michigan to New York State so she could have a safe legal abortion, so that she could go on and go to college and then ultimately make career choices and profession choices and have children when she was ready to have children. So that's what it's going to go back to. But how many people can afford that?
That was Barb Schmidt, community activist, speaking to Patricio Rubio. Yesterday, Governor Kathy Hochul of New York issued a statement, quote, "I want everyone to know that abortion remains safe, accessible, and legal in New York. Our state will always be a safe harbor for those seeking access to abortion care. To anyone who's working to deny abortion access, our message is clear, not here, not now, not ever," end quote. In Pennsylvania, Governor Tom Wolf issued a statement yesterday, quote, "First and most importantly, it is critical that everyone understands that abortion services are available and unharmed in Pennsylvania by the Supreme Court action. Providers may still provide reproductive health care services, and patients should continue the health care plan they've developed with their physicians. To women and pregnant people in surrounding states and across the country where this isn't the case, you are safe here in the Commonwealth," end quote. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Stay with us and NPR News for continued updates on the Supreme Court decision and other breaking news on air, online, and on your smartphone and smart speaker. Special thanks to Patricio Rubio for today's interviews and to Liam Mayo from The River Reporter for the interviews at the Monticello March. And thanks to you not only for listening and for supporting public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania, but for your patience and understanding as we transition our broadcast operations this week from Jeffersonville to our new home in Liberty. We're still working out a few kinks, but rest assured we're doing our best to keep you connected every day. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening and have a good day.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from 52 and Vine, a wine and spirit shop in Jeffersonville featuring local, national, and eclectic vintners and distillers. 52andvine.com. From the Upper Delaware Welcome Center at the Narrowsburg Union, featuring information about regional attractions and activities, along with products by the region's artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen at Catskills Curated. NarrowsburgUnion.com.
If you hear good music, you're listening to Radio Catskill. Your weekend can't even begin until Clyde Alvin Yates III sets it off Saturday night at 7. At 9, an hour of global sounds from the African diaspora on Afropop. Then at 10, selector Starkey and DJ Chuck spend 4 hours of funk, hip-hop, roots reggae, club classics, and more live on Old School Sessions. Saturday night only on Radio Catskill.
This group is dangerous.
Hey, this is A. Martinez with NPR. If you've been following the news about the economy, you may have heard that the prices for used vehicles are up, which also means that car or truck you don't need anymore, it's worth more as a donation. So if you don't need it anymore, or it's going to be too expensive to repair, donate your unwanted car or truck to this station. It's easy, free to you, and has a big impact on the station. Think about it.
We accept any vehicle, running or not. Donate at wjffradio.org.
Farm and Country is coming up next. Today's forecast, a sunshine high near 83. Tonight, clear, low 59. Tomorrow, partly sunny and a high of 84. This is WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello.
Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.